Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Father Reisman. I'm going to speak for a few minutes or so, maybe 20 minutes or so, just a few very simple thoughts as part of kind of our larger time of prayer, which brings us together this evening. Nothing profound, but just two broad things perhaps to think about, to put in our minds as we go out into the world and our people who each in our own way want to transform the church and to transform the world. And you know, as we take on any major challenge in life that requires two things to think about. On the one hand, a radical honesty about the challenges in front of us, kind of the state of reality. And then secondly, a sense of resolve to be able to take on those challenges, to confront that, not to be held back by fear. So those would be just the two things. I'll just say a few words about kind of the challenge and place for us as Catholics at this moment of history, and really to give us just a little bit of an urge as we move forward as to how we might confront this. I'm deeply appreciative of the time that you've provided, the gracious welcome that you've provided here to this area of the Archdiocese, to this space, this parish in particular. Thanks to those of you who are parishioners and those of you who are not, but came here tonight. Tonight at this time at 7 p.m., there are 18 locations throughout the Archdiocese. And at the same time, we're gathering together, coming together to pray evening prayer, Vespers, along with the Mass, the Liturgy of the Hours, of which Vespers evening prayer is part of that. It's what we call the public prayer of the church. With the Mass and the Liturgy of the Hours, somewhere on the planet, somewhere all around the world, the church is always at prayer, publicly together at prayer, and in some way, this prayer is taking place. So even though it's during those times when physically, perhaps we weren't in the same place that was happening, that's something really beautiful about the Catholic faith, the Catholic Church, always at prayer, which is so beautiful, and you're participating in that tonight. As Father Reisman mentioned, I'm Father Philip Bugacki. I serve as pastor at Christ King and St. Bernard parishes in Wauwatosa. I've been at Christ King for 8 years and St. Bernard for nearly 6 years. And like Father Reisman, I share in those two parishes, share in that responsibility, and also work with an associate, work with a staff and others to really be in that, what I call that mission field, that part of Milwaukee and Wauwatosa. I love it, love serving in multiple parishes in particular, because it enables us to be pushed to have a sense of a broader missionary outlook. Grateful for those of you who have been patient in your own parishes as we've had to encounter this these changes, to look patiently, differently at arrangements than we might be used to. After 6 years of serving as pastor at both of those parishes, more and more of our staff, our structures are shared, and we just are able to do so much more than we could alone. I'd never want to go back to just one parish, so I'm appreciative of that. Thanks to those of you who are here. There's a few folks from Wauwatosa who are here. I'm encouraged they take Lent seriously because they're hearing more of me than they need to. So I'm a little paranoid that this is penance for them to listen a little bit more to me. So Father Reisman mentioned Archbishop Lisecki has asked us to gather here around the Archdiocese to consider the local church in a larger sense as we pray together. So for priests who minister in one part of the diocese actually to go somewhere else, to be together with other priests in different parts of the diocese. So to help us to have a sense of a little larger sense of the church than just our backyard. So while you don't know me personally, we all know each other because of our love of the church, our connection always around the altar, sharing in the Eucharist. So we really are family as disciples of Jesus Christ. I'm also honored to spend time with Father Reisman, the pastor here, and at Immaculate Conception, and Father Carlos Londoño, your associate here. Not only do we share the ministerial priesthood, but Father Reisman and I have been friends for a very long time. I've been a priest now about 12 and a half years, and forever grateful for Father Nathan's role in my vocation to the priesthood. I was first starting to discern perhaps this call when I was in high school at Pius High School and then Marquette University. And as I kind of wanted to explore this a little bit more deeply to what the Lord was calling me to, I would visit St. Francis de Sales Seminary, where Father Reisman was then a seminarian, and he invited me to join the guys just very simply to pray the rosary, some community life, social opportunities, and just time to talk. just practical time to talk. One of the things that Father Riesman did when he was in seminary, he was like a student employee at the vocations office. And as I was getting really serious to a really major decision concerning discerning priesthood, I had lunch with the priest vocation director at the time, a very good priest, a holy man, but he was quirky. I don't know if you've noticed that. Some people are quirky. We're quirky. Father Riesman had this habit that I kind of learned a little bit later on. There was a rationale to this, but he did this with me. What happened is a few days afterwards, he scheduled lunch with me, and that was kind of the lunch after the lunch. And we got together at Miss Katie's Diner near Marquette, and it seemed innocent enough, but I was so grateful that it was just this opportunity to provide another perspective on personalities of priests, allow me to ask perhaps some questions. I was nervous in asking the vocations director because of the quirkiness. So it was simple but important, and it helped me to move forward a little bit more confidently. I share that just to remind us all of the need really powerfully to pray for vocations to priesthood, religious life, to happy, life-giving marriages, to a life devoted to God in some way, but also to be practically supportive. You know, not to forget about the practical things we need to do to follow through. If we always assume that someone else is going to, you know, kind of follow through on this, to handle those details, to encourage others, guess what? It never happens. You know, we should never assume that someone else is going to take on responsibilities in life. So Father Nathan and Riesman and I have remained friends, and when we do get together, we talk about our favorite topic, which is people, pastoring parishes, and how best to fulfill that responsibility to God and responsibility to you. So Archbishop Lisecki asked us to be together this evening, but also it's a pleasure to be with you, with Father Nathan and Father Carlos as well. I'm going to just start with the challenge, some things that we do need to confront, really the issue that's at our feet that now is starting to become a little bit more clear as time has gone on in the church, to describe what's happening, what's being asked in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, which is to take some time. Certainly in the next few months as we look forward to Easter this summer, but in a sense, perhaps, really probably the next 2 or 3 years, which is to rediscover our relationship with Sunday, to get back to those fundamentals in a new way, to rediscover the gift of Sunday. That's really the tagline, the title that you're going to hear very often now. Most centrally, of course, Sunday as the day of the resurrection, the day to meet the Lord Jesus in the most concrete way possible, this side of heaven, which is in the Eucharist, but also at the same time to reclaim Sunday, to be really intentional as a day of renewal, a day of rest, a day of contemplation and reflection at the gift of creation, the gift of life that we've all been given. It's been something, of course, that's been needed for some time, we'd say perhaps for some decades, but now the challenge, of course, is much more in our faces and really has to be confronted. So you're going to be hearing of the Sunday Initiative or the Gift of Sunday in the medium-term future. Bishop Jeff Haydens, former pastor here at St. Francis Cabrini, is actually involved in an effort with the U.S. Bishops Conference, the USCCB, that's just starting to be developed, that will take place over the next 3 years, and it's being referred to as a Eucharistic revival. What's interesting and so beautiful is just recently we've discovered that here in our archdiocese, we're really kind of ahead of the curve on this. Many other dioceses now and the USCCB are saying, this is really important. We need to be really intentional now in this time of reflection on the gift of Sunday. So, as we know, this has been necessary for some time, but all the more important for a reason that has accelerated things that perhaps were always happening, which is, of course, what we've been through now the last year. So we're here, of course, in early March. In a couple of weeks, what anniversary does that mark? You know, if you go to church, you know that anniversary. That's when something happened that actually, it literally took my breath away when I realized what had happened. It shocked me. And it was that call to suspend public worship of the Eucharist. I remember when I kind of heard that and I read the email from the diocese, I remember my eyes were blurred, actually, because I couldn't believe that this was real. And I don't kind of respond that way to things, but, you know, that this was actually happening. And remember, of course, this was supposed to be just a couple of weeks to make sure that hospitals weren't overwhelmed. We didn't know what was coming. And so we did the best that we could and accepted that reality, expecting this to be very brief. Little did we know that this would last much longer. So when we started public masses here in Milwaukee at the end of May, that was a lot earlier than a lot of other parts of the country, by the way, we didn't know what to expect. Again, you may remember this from a year ago if you're involved in the parishes. You know, we planned to open again, and what we had hoped would happen is what we as pastors, and maybe you were hearing, was that, oh my gosh, I really missed the Eucharist. You know, I don't realize what I had until it's gone, that people were longing for the Eucharist. So when we were reopening, one of the possibilities, of course, is that we were going to be overwhelmed with people. It's kind of the sense of what we were hearing, is that, oh my goodness, and then if we need to space a little, how is that all going to work? There was also another possibility, though, in the back of our minds that may have been true. And at the end of May, it happened. Very few people returned to Sunday Mass. And that really has continued to the present moment, all around the country and all around the world. If you see it in your parish, don't get discouraged. That's common everywhere. Mass attendance is significantly low. And it really didn't, at least in my experience, it really didn't return at Christmas as we would hope for. Maybe in the New Year was hoping for a little bit of that, maybe a little, even at Lent, perhaps just a little more, just a little bit of an uptake. But it's just the reality. You know, so you just kind of, you may know that, but I think you need to know we're not alone in that that phenomenon. Along with that, I see a lot of new faces at masses we do as pastors, people who really have come back. But for those perhaps in which the Sunday Mass was originally a little bit more casual, perhaps Christmas and Easter, what that means now is it could be a couple of years till they come back. And will we know what to do, you know, as you come back? And it's sobering. It's sobering that perhaps it will be quite some time until some folks have darkened our doors again. It's hard to hear, but we've got to confront that, to be honest with reality. And if we want to take on the challenge for a better future, and this really, really difficult question, will they ever come back? You know, we've got to sort of say that out loud. Will they ever return? Something I know I have forced myself not to do at night is to think about people I haven't seen now in a year. Because I'm going to lose sleep, you know? They're friends, people I care about, and kind of wonder, boy, I don't think I've seen them now in a year. It's sad. It really is sad, the people I care about and we care about. So what we have sensed is people are not coming back for several reasons. Some for very legitimate health reasons, you know, that make them more susceptible to infectious diseases with very serious consequences. We've got to acknowledge that, acknowledge the pain of sickness due to COVID, those who have lost lives, those whom we know, as those numbers get higher, we know that. Many due to fear, really, really a deep fear of getting sick, a fear of death. This has been a time to reflect on that's a big one, our fear of death. Also many with a sense of fear, but also seeing an opportunity perhaps to pass on a responsibility. You know, attending Mass on Sundays and days of obligation, among many other reasons for coming, it is a religious obligation. And as weak human beings, where we look for opportunities to get out of responsibilities, we all do that in various ways, and that's happened. You know, and I say that not as a judgment, but an assessment from kind of the eyes of pastors who are dealing with people through all of us. You know, we've never disappeared. We've been out here on the front lines and kind of the world of human interactions and human hearts, and it's painful. What's painful is that some damage has been done, and we see that over time now. And I'm going to state something that might be a little unpopular, but I think we kind of need to know this, and I'll explain why I explain this in just a moment. Attendance at religious celebrations, we don't have to, at this point now, over time, we don't have to rely on theories or predictions, but we now have many months of gathering in public at large and small celebrations in Mass, And we now know that Mass is really not a place where you're likely to get to pass COVID. Anytime you do anything, of course, there's a risk. You know, staying at home, you're going to get fat like me. there's a risk with that. But, you know, what we found now is that there aren't outbreaks that are happening at Catholic Masses. And we have kind of the hard data right in front of us. We see it. I think of just my two parishes. We've had large funerals and weddings, Masses daily on Sundays and baptisms. And I can't identify even one case being passed. And I've looked for kind of a rumor to sort of figure out what if it's out there, and just can't find that there. You definitely almost have to make it up to identify a case. And that's, I'm not saying it's zero. I'm sure they're out there. But it really is very remarkable. And I do think it's something that we need to share. It's just a basic piece of information that nationally, this is the experience that outbreaks are not happening at Mass. The reason I state this is just to humbly ask your patience. Ask your patience with those of us who work in parishes, those of us who are pastors, when we express, as maybe I just did, a little bit of frustration. You know, a little bit of frustration at this, that, you know, that this is not the place where this disease is spreading in uncontrollable ways. Yet that idea, though, is being used sometimes to attack us as a way to admit to that responsibility. So that's just why I share that. Here's what we do know, though. Whatever those reasons may be, our Mass muscles have weakened. So, you know, when we don't use certain body parts, the muscles decline, they atrophy, and they become weak. So that practice of regularly fulfilling a religious responsibility has changed, you know, and it really must concern us. As Catholics, we're sacramental people. What that means is the normal, the usual way that God communicates his grace to us is through the sacraments, and that's in person, face-to-face, and with touch. And that's why it's so painful when someone legitimately cannot attend due to physical reasons, when they become homebound. That's a ministry in a lot of parishes, because it really is very painful when that happens outside of a pandemic. Or legitimate health issues, of course, related to this particular coronavirus. It's truly painful. But falling out of that practice, it's weakened the muscles that many of us have relating to something that's really just so central to us as Catholics. So what I want to express this evening, just very importantly, is thank you to you who are here. Those of you who are here at these services around the Archdiocese this evening have stepped forward when many of our friends perhaps have been unable or have chosen not to. And I have a strong suspicion many of you have been coming back or all along attending Sunday Mass. And I just want to say thank you, just from a distance here, to kind of pat you on the back and encourage you. It can be a little lonely, you know, it can be a little hard, and we're so very, very appreciative. I also want to say that this effort now that's here in Milwaukee and around the country and around the world is as follows. Yes, it is certainly to say, boy, we need people back in here for their health, for our health, to be back inside the church, to meet the Lord in the Eucharist. But first, what needs to happen is we've got to go out. You know, we've got to get out. You know, you especially as the laity, to be witnesses within your spheres of life as neighbors, as family members, as co-workers, as friends, as people who care about others, to really take on the difficult work of sharing the gift that you have in your relationship with God. Not to keep that to ourselves, but to, out of love, to show others the riches of what we know and see every Sunday in the Mass. And that's really our goal right now, is to go out. It always is, but especially right now. I really want to say, never underestimate the power of your example as the laity. I know I speak for priests who stand up here, and we look out. I know I do this all the time. I look out literally from an ambo like this, and I see people like you who are good neighbors, who are good people, who are good friends, who are good family members, who are good co-workers. We're never perfect in these things, but really are just very good people. And a major part of your life is the Sunday Eucharist. You might not recognize it that way, but that's a part of the reason that you are who you are. And that's a really powerful example of evangelization. You know, sometimes just being good, normal people out in the world, you know, evangelization. And sometimes I notice it's at funerals, in fact. You know, you have someone who worked at the phone company or Miller Coors or whatever, and you're at their funeral, and their old coworkers come. And there's these wonderful things that they say about their coworkers. The priest or someone in a, you know, maybe if there's a eulogy, might say these wonderful things about them. And this person who's coming into the Catholic Church realizes, boy, perhaps a lot of this was because this person was really an active Catholic. You know, that this person that I knew as a coworker or my neighbor or family member, here I am, and they speak so highly of her and her relationship to the Sunday Mass. You know, or, you know, not a funeral, but someone just gets to know you and they realize, hey, you're just a really good person. But by the way, Sunday morning at a certain point, you need to adjust plans to make sure that you're at Mass. That's just really important. Those are very simple things you do. Don't underestimate that. I think sometimes it's hard for you to appreciate really the gift that you are just in being good, normal people out in the world and you're Catholics. So the issue here, of course, is it's about the salvation of souls and the good of the world. That's why we've got to be concerned about this, concerned about Sunday Mass, and that likely pullback that's occurred during this time exacerbated something that's already been happening for some decades. So that's the first thing I want to do, is just to acknowledge where we are, the challenge that we have, to be honest about that, and that you're not alone in a sense that there is a serious issue that really became very clear this last year in the weakening of our muscles of religious obligation, and to acknowledge with gratitude your role. Really, your role in sticking with this and the ebbs and the flows with your own fears and limited confidence at times, but to challenge us to go outside, imperfectly as we are, to go outside. We can't just kind of sit and wait for this to get better. It requires some action. So the second and then just final thing I wanted us to consider then is just to start a little bit to look forward. Of the many beautiful and important reasons that we can express about our relationship to the Sunday Eucharist, just to consider, I think, this following reality. As long as our relationship to the Sunday think about us as individuals or even as a society, if we don't get, in a broader sense, Sunday correct, it's going to be really hard to get Monday correct. All right, I'll explain that in a moment. Especially right now, this is very clear. When we don't get Sunday correct, we're not going to get Monday correct. The day of the resurrection and Jesus' very specific command that we come together and eat his body and blood, it wasn't a thought exercise. It wasn't a minor part of Jesus' teaching. He said, until the day when I come again and there will be no more Eucharist because you're going to see my Heavenly Father face to face, the Eucharist on this side of heaven is the source and summit of everything, of the entire Christian life. It orders the rest of creation. It orders the rest of our day. And if Sunday with the risen Jesus isn't central, what's going to happen is we're going to see that. We see that in its effects in our lives and every other moment this week, both as individuals and collectively. And in a way, this is very much in front of our face. If we step back just a little bit, as people who have turned away from God over the last decades and really the result of that, here's what is happening. I describe it this way. The world is crying. If we're honest about that, the world is crying. I'm going to share a very tragic statistic. I don't know if you've heard this before, but it still shocks me as I think about this. A very tragic statistic in the United States that I'm not sure we're very aware of. And what happened in the year 2018, it marked the first time in 100 years that life expectancy in the United States, for 3 years in a row, it shortened. It actually declined. With a constantly increasing wealth, increasing resources in healthcare, life expectancy got shorter. And that was all before a pandemic, of course. The last time this occurred was 100 years ago, the Spanish flu. And the reason, there's a major reason that we're on average living shorter lives. There are three major causes for this: suicide, opioid addiction, and cirrhosis of the liver due to alcohol abuse. And it's affecting especially the young. That's why the average is going down, especially the young. Suicide, opioid addiction, and cirrhosis of the liver. Those are diseases. What they are, they're diseases of despair, of sadness, of hopelessness, of despair. The world is crying. And that really should shock our consciences. It should affect our hearts as people who are called to love one another. It's sad. In the last several decades, the number of people who report having not one close friend whom they can share their thoughts has rapidly increased, but big time, very, very quickly. It's well over half the population says, I don't have a close friend whom I can share my life with. The young adults and younger, the youngest of our population, what they report more and more so now is loneliness. And as a result of that, they have health issues, physical health issues that are connected to loneliness that often come from people who are much, much older. A 20-year-old now is having health issues that are reserved for an 80 and a 90-year-old. And loneliness is bringing that on. Over the last year, I'm going to say something that I think you know if you have been dealing with people at all, in small numbers or larger numbers. I will say we know this as priests who have kind of had a front row to humanity. And it's been rough. You know, if you're in a people-facing position at all, especially, I know some restaurant owners who say the same thing, which is this: over the last year, we're nuts. We're nuts. That's probably not a technical term or the right term, but, you know, we're nuts. We're angry. We're short, reacting in over-the-top sorts of ways to things that, you know, that we can't control. I think that's a big part of it. Just lots of that sort of stuff. And broken relationships with friends. I know so many people in my life who said, yeah, I haven't talked to my college roommate now in a year, and friendship's probably over. I mentioned that in a homily a few months ago, and I got some emails and said, Father, you forgot about family members. I haven't talked to my sister-in-law in a year now. We got in fights over COVID stuff, over political stuff, over this and that, and people continue to share that with me. It's really sad. Right about now, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's the middle of winter. It's winter, and it's happening again a lot recently. I've noticed this. It's a typical Wisconsin winter. We've had some kind of mild ones, I think, the last few years, but this is normal. But again, very short, very depressed, very angry, irritated, and then taking that out on others. I just say all that, first of all, be patient with others and also be patient with yourselves. Francis de Sales would say that often in his Letters of Spiritual Direction. Be patient with others, but first start with yourself. Be patient with yourself. There's been a little exception to all of this, though, and I think it's important to recognize this. This is no silver bullet, but I think it's important to recognize. So, the Gallup polling organization, for many years, since I think 2006, what they've done is they've asked respondents in the United States to report on their mental health. To say, all right, how do you report your mental health? And every year, there's been one group that consistently reports higher satisfaction with their mental health than the general population. And it's those who regularly attend a religious service, weekly or almost weekly. What's remarkable, though, is they did this again in November of 2020. And the results confirmed the observations I just mentioned, that on a whole, the general population reported big time, an 8 to 10% drop in their mental health, except for one group. And it was really remarkable. One group, those who attend religious services on a weekly basis during the pandemic, they actually reported not only stable mental health, but it ticked up a little bit. It improved a bit, contradicted the rest of the general population. So I'm not saying go to a Sunday Mass is, you know, going to fix all of our issues, but, you know, every single secular study on mental health of the general population has always sort of indicated that. It's not obviously not well advertised, but that kind of exception, that those who regularly attend a weekly religious service report more higher and more stable mental health. And it should concern us. I don't say this to point fingers. I mentioned, by the way, this study and a homily just a few weeks ago, and I got a lot of compliments, and I realized later why they loved it. It's because they heard, and you sitting out there heard that, oh, I'm more sane than others because I'm at Mass. Only realized that later. It's like, oh, that's why they liked it. A compliment is always good. And I say this, of course, not to point fingers, but to say we've got to be concerned. Concerned about the tears of the world. It's not a party out there. As people have neglected, fallen away from this relationship with God. We really do need to take this very seriously. And as more and more generations arrive without this basic relationship to Jesus Christ that includes concrete decisions about priorities, such as meeting him on Sundays. So when we get Sunday correct, that moves us to look at reality differently. It's the way we're called to be countercultural, I propose, at the moment, as small as we may feel, to really be countercultural in that way, to be perhaps a voice of calm, There's deserts and mountains, those first two images of Lent. Lent is not, you know, life is not only full of mountaintops, it's deserts as well. Jesus says at a certain point of the Transfiguration, all right, we got to go down now, and we're going to walk towards Jerusalem in particular. But perhaps for us to provide maybe that larger, broader perspective on the world, that this isn't the only world, you know, and that we're called to eternal life. When we have this perspective, or we understand reality, not only as kind of this bad day that I'm having, or not only maybe this bad year that I'm having, but we kind of start to think about reality in terms of 100 or 1,000 or maybe 1,000,000 years, and really to eternal life with God. The Sunday Eucharist, what it does is it orients us to that every single day, particularly on Sundays, and then sends us out into the world with this broader perspective. Sunday is the first day of creation and the last day. Jesus is the Alpha and the Omega. Not our fears, not our disappointments, not our diseases, not even death, but Jesus Christ. So when we get that right, like every saint who was devoted to the poor and to the oppressed as well, they were deeply connected to the Sunday Eucharist. That's what drove them to see Christ in others and to perform the most heroic acts of charity in human history. Sunday right gets Monday right. So in a word for us getting Sunday right to get Monday right, you know, that's we're all suffering exhaustion. Those of us here, we're the fear, the painful reality of death. We're fearful of this, but rest and relief in the Eucharist. So just savor the simple presence of the Lord as you come to church. So just two things perhaps to consider this evening, where we are and this little sense of why it's so important to move forward. But I wonder if we might be united in a simple task over the next few weeks of Lent. Some of you have done this already, and I'd encourage all of us to do it. And that would be to read and to pray over the document that's been issued by the Archbishop. It's entitled The Gift of Sunday, if you're not familiar with it. It was issued just recently at the end of January. It's available on the Archdiocese of Milwaukee's website. If you don't have internet access, go to your parish and they'll be happy to print it for you. It's very well done. I find it very, very well done. It's not very long. It's divided into paragraphs that can kind of stand alone if you're a slow reader or not a real active reader, if you just want to take some more time to go through it. So not only is the content good, the format is also very helpful. There's also a version of it called the Study Guide. If you can, on the website, choose that one. What it does is it has the actual text of the reflection, but it's in line with some questions, some further scripture reading, some further thoughts, suggestions for prayer. So it's very well done. And it does present us then with this just a simple question. If Sunday Mass has been a major part of our lives, perhaps, why do we come to church? You know, to always continue to ask that question. And I think the document kind of puts in front of us that very basic question and starts to help us to remind us of some of the basics, to help us all to learn some things. So we're in a time of challenge. When the church has been challenged, though, in the past, it's always been its finest hour. It's always the church's finest hour. When she's kind of backed into a corner throughout history, throughout 2,000 years, those have been precursors to spectacular moments. And I hope we know that. Let's not reemerge as the same parishes, the same Catholics, but better ones, simpler ones, more focused on the truth of the gospel. You know, we can't just pick up where we were 2 years ago. We've got to return to those basics all the more powerfully. It's at times like these that saints have been made, these challenging moments in the church. Let's be ready for that. Take on this simple moment of prayer this evening to commit to that, aware of that reality, ready to meet that challenge. And we place it before the Lord in our prayer this evening.